emanation body. An emanation body is a form body that can be met even by disciples who are common beings. It does not possess the five certainties. There are three types: supreme emanation bodies, artisan emanation bodies, and birth emanation bodies. A supreme emanation body must be identified as one emanated by a complete enjoyment body, adorned with the major and minor marks, which brings about the welfare of disciples through 12 deeds in various world systems, such as Jambudvipa, this world. An example is the teacher of this era, Shakyamuni Buddha. The 12 deeds in the case of Shakyamuni are: 1. Descent from the joyous pure land to this world. 2. Entry into his mother's womb. 3. Birth in Lumbini Garden. 4. Becoming skilled in the arts and playing the sports of youth. 5. Taking charge of the kingdom and keeping a harem. 6. Upon going to the four gates of the city, becoming discouraged with cyclic existence, and, due to that attitude, leaving the householder's life. 7. Practicing austerities for 6 years at the Naranjana River. 8. Going to the Bodhi tree and sitting in meditation under it. 9. Overcoming all the hosts of demons. 10. Becoming fully enlightened on the 15th day of the 4th month. 11. Turning the wheel of doctrine on the 4th day of the 6th month. 12. Passing from sorrow in the city of Kushinagara. To the sight of ordinary disciples, some of those 12 deeds are of the Bodhisattva Shakyamuni before attaining enlightenment, and others are his deeds after becoming a Buddha. However, all 12 are simply displays of such activities out of a Buddha's skillful means for taming disciples. All of them, beginning from descent from the joyous pure land, are deeds of Buddha, since he was actually enlightened many eons earlier. An artisan emanation body is, for instance, the teacher Shakyamuni's emanation in the form of a lute player on the evening of his death, in order to subdue the king of the Gandharvas, Sananda. A birth emanation body is, for instance, the Devaputra Shvetaketu in the joyous Pure Land. From among the four bodies, the nature body and wisdom truth body cannot be seen by disciples. Both form bodies, the enjoyment body and the emanation body, fulfill the welfare of transmigrating beings on a grand scale through appearing directly to disciples. In addition to the fourfold division described above, the Buddha bodies can also be divided into three: truth body, enjoyment body, and emanation body, by grouping together the nature body and wisdom truth body as one truth body. The four bodies can also be treated as two: truth body and form body, through including the enjoyment body and emanation body in one form body. There are many approaches for dividing the qualities of such a Buddha. Let us explain them from the viewpoint of the following four: body, speech, mind, and activities. Qualities of body. The physical qualities of a Buddha are the 32 major marks and 80 minor marks. The 32 marks of a great being are, for instance, the golden wheels on the palms of the hands and soles of the feet that glitter very brightly, like a bas-relief. The 80 minor marks are, for instance, fingernails red like the color of copper and an oily complexion. Through merely seeing such a beautiful body bedecked with these adornments, special seeds of liberation can be produced. Since the entities of the major and minor marks are not like our contaminated aggregates, but are of the essence of omniscient wisdom, each of the major and minor marks of a Buddha, and even each hair on a Buddha's head, directly perceives all objects of knowledge. Buddhas set sentient beings on solitary paths by way of deeds appropriate for each particular disciple, displaying various physical creations simultaneously in limitless lands of the 10 directions, like optical illusions. In some lands they display birth, in some turning the wheel of doctrine, in some the manner of training in the bodhisattva deeds, in some the manner of passing beyond sorrow. In a single hair pore of their body, Buddhas can display clearly all the bodies and arrays of lands of all Buddhas of the three times, past, present, and future, as well as all practices of the path of those who are still learning. Such are the physical qualities. Qualities of speech. The speech of a Buddha is pleasant because it produces and furthers roots of virtue in the individual mental continuums of others, in accordance with their dispositions and interests. The speech of a Buddha is soft because it creates happiness of mind in listeners. It is agreeable because it teaches wholesome topics such as the two truths and dependent arising. Because the elements of the words are well constructed, it is cogent. These are some of the 64 qualities of melodious speech that are fully present in even a portion of a Buddha's speech. Specifically, when even a single word of a one gone thus, a Buddha, emerges, the transmigrators who are gathered there, such as gods, nagas, humans, and animals, understand it in their own language, and their own particular doubts are removed. Such are the qualities of speech. Qualities of mind. With respect to the qualities of exalted wisdom, there are the 21 categories of uncontaminated exalted wisdom. Setting aside the categories that are held in common with hearers and solitary realizers, among the unshared qualities of a Buddha are the 10 powers. 1. Knowledge of sources and non-sources. 2. Knowledge of actions and their fruitions. 3. Knowledge of the concentrations, meditative liberations, and so forth. 4. Knowledge of superior and non-superior faculties. 5. Knowledge of the varieties of inclinations. 6. Knowledge of the divisions of the 18 constituents, and so forth. 7. Knowledge of the paths leading to all forms of cyclic existence and solitary peace. 8. Knowledge remembering former states, earlier lives. 9. Knowledge of death, transmigration, and birth. 10. Knowledge of contaminations and their extinction. The four fearlessnesses are the facts, once Buddhahood has been attained, of there being no one who could properly dispute 1. The assertion that, in terms of their own welfare, Buddhas have attained the marvelous fulfillment of realization that directly knows all phenomena. 2. The assertion that, in terms of their own welfare, they have attained the marvelous fulfillment of abandonment, which is extinction of all obstructions. 3. The assertion that, in terms of others' welfare, desire, and so forth, are obstacles to liberation. And, 4. The assertion that, in terms of others' welfare, realization of the status of the four truths is the path of liberation. The three mindful establishments are the exhaustive abandonments of 1. Attachment to having their retinues listen respectfully when they teach doctrine. 2. Anger at the disrespectful. And 3. Both attachment to and anger at those who have a mixture of respect and disrespect. The three non-defenses are that one does not, upon fearing that others would know one's faults of the three doors of body, speech, and mind, have the thought, I will conceal those faults. Since a Buddha is mindful at all times to engage in actions of body and speech for the welfare of others, a Buddha has a nature of not being forgetful. A Buddha has completely destroyed the predispositions of the afflictive obstructions, and the obstructions to omniscience. A Buddha has great compassion, which is the continual thought during all six periods of day and night to bring about help and happiness for all beings, thinking, who is there to be tamed? The 18 unshared qualities of a Buddha are distinctive qualities of a Buddha, not shared with others, such as hearers and solitary realizers. These are the following. Six are included in conduct. 1. Not being mistaken, such as being fearful of thieves, tigers, and the like when traveling in towns, cities, forests, and so forth. 2. Not having uncontrolled speech, such as letting out loud cries upon losing one's way or bursting out in laughter due to the influence of predispositions. 3. Not having memory lapses, such as letting an activity slip due to forgetting it or being late for an activity. 4. Not having a mind that is not in meditative equipoise on the meaning of emptiness at all times, whether in or out of meditative absorption. 5. Not having the discrimination of difference, that is the conception that cyclic existence is inherently established as unfavorable, and that nirvana is inherently established as peaceful. 6. Not having the indifference of neglecting the welfare of sentient beings upon not individually analyzing the time and so forth for taming them. 6 more unshared qualities of a Buddha are included in realization. Number 7. The uninterrupted arising of the aspiration for love and compassion, bringing about the welfare of sentient beings, and so forth. 8. Effort that is enthusiasm for going to Buddha lands that surpass in number the grains of sand on the banks of the Ganges, for the sake of even one sentient being. 9. Constant mindfulness never to forget the styles of mental behavior of all sentient beings, as well as the methods for taming them. 10. Meditative stabilization set in equipoise on the suchness of phenomena. 11. Wisdom that knows how to teach appropriately the 84,000 bundles of doctrine as antidotes to the afflictive styles of behavior of disciples. And 12. Non-deterioration of the release, that is a state of having abandoned all obstructions exhaustively. 3 more unshared qualities of a Buddha are included in activities. Number 13. Exalted physical activities, such as in emitting light, the 4 styles of behavior, going, strolling, lying down, and sitting, and so forth. 14. Exalted verbal activities of teaching what is in accordance with the inclinations of sentient beings. And 15. Exalted mental activities endowed with great love and compassion. And 3 unshared qualities are included in wisdom. Numbers 16, 17, and 18. Unimpeded direct knowledge of all objects of knowledge of the past, present, and future. A Buddha is endowed with limitless, unsurpassed qualities, marvelous and fantastic, such as an exalted knowledge of all aspects that directly perceives all phenomena included in the aggregates, constituents, and sources. A Buddha's quality of mercy is such that there is no situation in which a Buddha does not produce fully developed compassion for sentient beings tortured by suffering. This is due to the power of having brought to completion the great compassion that he previously cultivated again and again on the path of learning. There are always sentient beings equal to the limits of space, tortured by many specific types of suffering, and there is no occasion when a Buddha is unaware of them. Hence, a Buddha's great compassion for them is constant. In dependence upon that compassion, a Buddha uninterruptedly brings about the welfare of transmigrators. Qualities of activity. The qualities of activity are twofold, spontaneous and constant. Regarding spontaneity, the sport of a supramundane victor's form body, adorned with the major and minor marks in the 4 modes of behavior, going, strolling, lying down, and sitting, and various magical displays is not involved with the conception of exertion. However, the fortunate, in dependence upon seeing it, engender an altruistic intention to become enlightened, the six perfections, and so forth, whereby they come to attain a state of everlasting bliss. This is the mode of physical spontaneity. Although a Buddha does not think, "I will teach this," a Buddha teaches limitless doors of doctrine appropriate to the inclinations of disciples. This is the mode of verbal spontaneity. Aside from the conqueror's merciful great compassion, a Buddha does not have conceptual motivation. But the rain of excellent doctrine falls, establishing transmigrators in high status within cyclic existence, and in the definite goodness of liberation and omniscience. This is the mode of mental spontaneity. There are no cases in which ordinary worldly beings perform actions without the exertion and striving of body, speech, or mind. However, from the eighth bodhisattva ground, the coarse exertion motivating the teaching of doctrine and so forth is pacified, whereby others' welfare arises of its own accord. Nevertheless, at that time, a bodhisattva has not abandoned the subtle conceptions motivating physical and verbal activity. The subtle condition opposing spontaneous engagement in the welfare of others is a subtle conceptuality motivating involvement in physical and verbal activity. It is called uncontaminated action from among the 12 branches of dependent arising, when these are classed in terms of the obstructions to omniscience. Therefore, when that is abandoned, the welfare of others arises spontaneously. Regarding the constancy of a Buddha's exalted activities, earlier, at the time of the path, while gradually traversing the 10 bodhisattva grounds, special qualities included within the two collections of merit and wisdom were produced, remained, and increased. Because of the fact that such marvelous causes precede Buddhahood, a Buddha's activities are constant. In addition, a compassionate one, a Buddha, is always considering what conditions there are to assist in destroying the adventitious defilements, the afflictions together with their predispositions, that obstruct the basic constituent of sentient beings, the essence of a one gone thus, the Buddha nature, which in its essence is not polluted by defilement. A Buddha perpetually teaches techniques for destroying these adventitious defilements. Consequently, a Buddha's exalted activities arise spontaneously and constantly. The preceding segments have given a brief summary of the essential points of ascertaining the presentation of number 1, the basis, the two truths, number 2, and thereupon the path, the modes of traversing the paths of the lesser and great vehicles in dependence upon the three trainings, which are the subjects discussed in the three scriptural collections of the word of the Siddhura, Shakyamuni Buddha, the practice of method and wisdom. Number 3, as well as the fruition, the four bodies of a Buddha together with the Buddha activities. These have not been described in detail or at length, since it would have taken too long. Chapter 10, Tibetan Buddhism. Let us briefly discuss the systems upholding the good traditions of the doctrine of the teacher Buddha, the supramundane victor, in our country of Tibet. There is no place within the length and breadth of the three provinces of Tibet that was not pervaded by Buddhist doctrines. The teaching spread like the light of the sun. Early dissemination of Buddhism into Tibet. Due to a difference between earlier and later periods, the designations early dissemination of the teaching and later dissemination of the teaching came to be used. The 32nd king of Tibet was the religious king, Sungten Gampo, who assumed rule at age 13. He built the main temples at Lhasa, Tradruk, and so forth, as well as many main temples in three areas, called Tadul, Yongdo, and Runon. He sent his minister, Thumbi Sambhota, to India, to study grammar and alphabets. Using Indian scripts as models, he invented a Tibetan script and composed 8 treatises on grammar. The king invited such masters as Kumara and the Brahmin Shankara from India, and the Nepali master Shila Manju, who translated many branches of the Buddha's sutras and tantras, thereby establishing a pathway for the teaching in Tibet. Although lecturing on and listening to the tantric doctrine were not widespread, the king himself gave instructions primarily concerning the great compassionate one, Avalokiteshvara, to many fortunate persons. Then the 37th king, Trisongdetsen, came and, seeking to propagate the excellent doctrine, invited the abbot Shantarakshita from Sahore in eastern India and the great master Padmasambhava. The abbot and master, as well as those renowned as the 108 great Indian pandits, including the masters Vimalamitra, Shantigarbha, Dharmakirti, Buddhaguha, Kamalashila, and Vibhudisiddha, and Tibetan translators such as Varachana, Natjana Kumaram, Gawa Beltek, Jokro Lugyal Tsen, and Chang Yeshe Dey, these persons translated various sutras and tantras spoken by the Buddha concerning discipline, the sets of discourses, and manifest knowledge, as well as the more important treatises commenting on their thought. They also established schools of explanation and practice. The 41st king, Kriyal Bhajan, appointed 7 families for the support of each monk and built 1,000 temples. Having petitioned the 2 types of recipients, of offering mantrikas and ordained clergy, to stand on the ends of 2 pieces of silk tied to his hair, he made offerings to them and revered them. Such were his limitless deeds of reverence for the conqueror's precious teaching. He invited many leading Indian scholars, such as Acharya Jinamitra, Surendra Bodhi, Shilendra Bodhi, and Dhanashila, together with leading Tibetan scholars such as Ratna Rakshita and Dharmata Shila, and translators like Jnana Sena and Jaya Rakshita. They were instructed by the king to reform the translations made during earlier generations by translating technical terminology, which earlier had no equivalents in Tibetan and thus could not be translated, and by improving on passages difficult to understand. In accordance with the king's decree that this be done in harmony with the texts of the Lesser and Great Vehicles, they reformed the translation of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra in 100,000 stanzas, making it into 16 volumes, and made definitive translations of most of the scriptures that had been translated earlier, through the formulation of new terminology. This dissemination and propagation of the precious Buddhist teaching to greater and greater levels throughout the snowy land of Tibet is known as the early dissemination of the teaching. The later dissemination of Buddhism into Tibet. The 42nd king, Langdharma, suppressed the Buddha's teachings. At that time, 3 masters in the lineage of the great abbot Shantarakshita, Marshakya, Yogejung, and Zong Rapsel, escaped to Amdo province. There, they gave full ordination to the great Lama Gongpa Rapsel, and from him, the number of people ordained in Tibet gradually increased. In addition, the pandits Dharmapala and Sadhupala from eastern India came to Upper Ngari, and the great Kashmiri pandit Shakya Shri came to Tibet. And through their lineages, the number of ordained increased greatly. From their time on, many pandits and adepts came to Tibet, and many skilled Tibetan translators underwent great hardship to travel to India and Nepal. There, at the feet of many scholars and adepts, they offered gifts of gold and heard many doctrines of sutra and tantra. They translated these into Tibetan and propagated them in Tibet. The scholars and adepts who followed in their lineages restored the precious teaching of the subduer, the Buddha. This period, when the Buddha's teachings came to shine like the sun throughout the land of Tibet, is renowned as the later dissemination of the teaching. schools of Tibetan Buddhism. A variety of nominally different schools of Buddhist doctrinal systems developed in Tibet. For example, Nyingmapa, the old translation school, is designated from the viewpoint of time. Tsakyapa, Dartlungpa, Trigungpa, Drukpa, and Kadempa or Gelugpa, for instance, are designated from the viewpoint of the place where they formed. Karmakaju and Balukpa, for instance, are designated from the viewpoint of the name of a master, the former following the Karmapas and the latter following Buddhan Rinchen Drup. Kadampa, Dzogchenpa, Chakchenpa, and Shijewa, for instance, are designated from the viewpoint of instructional systems. All of those schools of doctrine can be included in the two, the old translation school, Nyingma, and the new translation schools, Sarma. How are old and new differentiated? Great vehicle doctrines disseminated in Tibet are of two types, sutra and mantra. Old and new are posited primarily in terms of the dissemination of the great vehicle teaching of secret mantra, rather than terms of the sutra class. The translations made during the period of the earlier dissemination, up to and including Pandit Smriti's arrival in Tibet, are renowned as the early translations of secret mantra, and those who bear the system of their explanation and practice are renowned as followers of the old translation school of Nyingmapa. The translations of secret mantra made from the time of the translator Rinchen Zongpo are renowned as the new translations of secret mantra. These were begun by Rinchen Zongpo in 978 AD, and subsequently translators such as Trokmi, Danakpo, and Marpa of Lotrak translated many tantric texts into Tibetan and widely propagated the teachings of new secret mantra. The four main orders in Tibet. Among the schools that presently exist in Tibet, there is the old translation school of Nyingmapa and the new translation schools of Kagyupa, Tsakyapa, and Gelugpa. These four are very widespread and the most predominant. First, Nyingma. In 810 AD, the great master Padmasambhava of Odiana came to Tibet. At Samye Chimpu, he translated many tantras and means of achievement, such as the eight great sets of achievement. He turned the wheel of doctrine of the great secret Vajra vehicle for a fortunate group, including the king Trisong Dezen and 25 ministers. Through the gradual development of its transmission, the old translation school of secret mantra, Nyingma, was formed. Second, Kagyu. In the year 1012 AD, Mardan Chuki Lodru, known also as Marpa, was born. He went to India three times, where he met many gurus such as the Pandits Naropa and Maitripada. He translated and explained authoritative texts, which he transmitted to the Venerable Milarepa, the incomparable Dakpo Laje, known also as Gampopa, and so forth. This transmission is known as the Kagyu school. It has four greater sub-schools and eight lesser sub-schools, the four greater being Kamtsangpa, Trikungpa, Datlungpa, and Drukpa. Third, Sakya. In 1034 AD, Kunchok Jalpo of the Khun family was born. From the translator Drokmi, he heard the doctrine of paths and fruitions, which was transmitted from the glorious Dharmapala, abbot of Nalanda, whose name upon becoming an adept was Varupa, and from the great Pandit Gayadhara. The lineage of transmission from the five great earlier masters, Sachen Kunkan Yingpo, Sonam Dzemo, Trakpa Jaltsen, Sakya Pandita Kunkha Jaltsen Palsongpo, and Shugyal Pakpa, is known as the Sakyapa school. Fourth, Gelugpa. The great scholar of Vikramashila, Deepamkara Sri Jnana, came to Tibet in 1039, for he propagated the profound doctrines of Sutra and Tantra widely. The lineage of transmission from Kudan, the translator Lodan Sherup, and Drontumpa is known as Kadampa. The great Tsongkhapa was born in 1357 and came to bear the lineage of Kadampa. By way of hearing, thinking, and meditating on the full scope of the word of the supramundane victor, and the valid treatises commenting on their thought that had been translated into Tibetan, he eliminated misconception in his own mind with respect to their meaning, forming a system of good, unmistaken instruction in the profound meaning of the scriptures. The lineage of transmission through his students, Gyaltsep, Kedrup, and so forth, is known as Gadempa or Gelugpa. Quite a number of people think that the religious systems of Tibet, Nyingma, Sakya, Kagyu, and Gelug, differ in the sense that many of their presentations of the bases, paths, and fruitions disagree, like those of non-Buddhist and Buddhist systems. This is not at all the case. To explain the reason clearly, let us take the contemporary example of airplanes. Although they differ in size, shape, and color, and also somewhat in terms of internal machinery due to the skill and experience of the individual designers and craftsmen, as well as in how they are equipped, no matter how many types of airplane there are, they do not differ in the fact that they fly in the sky in dependence upon the force of air and combustion. Just as they must be identified as a single class, as all being airplanes, so the differences that exist among the schools of Tibetan Buddhism are merely minor variations in the modes of skillful methods for leading students on the path. The minor differences in terminology and so forth arise from the respective experiences of the great scholar adepts who founded the schools. Aside from these minor differences, these religious systems, in fact, are the same, in that their main and final objective of achievement is the state of Buddhahood. They are also the same in terms of the stages of practice that serve as the means for achieving Buddhahood, in that they do not differ with respect to practicing a union of sutra and mantra, the inseparability of the three special trainings explained before, and a view that does not pass beyond the four seals that testify to a doctrinal system's being Buddhist, which are that all products are impermanent, all contaminated things are miserable, all phenomena are empty and selfless, and nirvana is peace. Therefore, in the end, they all come down to the same thing. Some people say that the religion of Tibet is Lamaism, as if it were a religion not taught by the Buddha. But this is not so. The original author of the sutras and tantras that are the root source of all schools of Tibetan Buddhism is the teacher Shakyamuni Buddha. Next, the great Indian pandits, using reasoning purified by the three analyses, explained and delineated the meaning of the thought of these sutras and tantras. Also, the great Indian yogis, who had attained adepthood, set forth profound instructions as a result of authoritative realizations gained upon implementing those doctrines in practice. Finally, the bodhisattva kings and ministers of the snowy land of Tibet and the benevolent early translators underwent hardships without concern for life or limb, not to mention wealth and resources. And with great effort, like a river with many ships flowing to India and Nepal, heard instructions from indisputably famous scholars and adepts, delighting them with the three delights, making offerings, venerating with body and speech, and achieving what they taught. It is these doctrines that were translated into Tibetan. Tibetan lamas took these as the basis and root, and thereupon listened to them, thought about them, and meditated on them. They did not fabricate a single doctrine from among the main points that does not accord with those Indian traditions. Any Tibetan Buddhist who has even the slightest need to remove a qualm about a point of doctrine or needs a source will refer to the statements of the Buddha or an Indian scholar adept.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.